What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Double Tap, our second edition. We are going to go over a few things news related and whatnot today. Every month, we like to discuss a particular topic, or we are going to be discussing particular topics. Like the last episode, we talked about zombies and zombie related media in any format, books, movies, music, and whatnot. Then the next month, we'll have a different one. If you guys have any suggestions or any things that you would like to talk about or anything that you like in general, just hit us up. I am Dave. With me always is my boy
Tony. And just to add on to what Dave said, you know, if we like to try and keep the topic as what's coming out or what's going on in news. So, you know, we felt zombies was good for this month, but Dying Light, the Resident Evil remake, the Call of Duty zombies all coming out this month. So I think zombies was a great pick for this month. So for next month, if you guys have any suggestions you want to give us, shoot us a message on Twitter. I'm at Tony the Gamer Guy. Dave's at Deadpool Orta. So, and we'll give another plug for that at the end of the show. But yeah, we just want some suggestions if you can help us out there. So, let's, talk about what we're playing, Dave. What are you getting into this week or last week, I should say?
Still been heavy on Destiny, trying out the new hard Crota raid. I actually picked up downloaded the I believe it's hashtag all zombies must die.
Okay, what's that?
Is it kill all zombies? I can't remember. I feel like such a space case right now. I have so many different things going on. But it's a top down third person arcade stick style shooter. Kind of like a zombie apocalypse or the arcade zombie version of the zombie mode in, the first Black Ops.
Dead Ops Arcade or whatever.
Yeah, the Dead Ops Arcade. And the cool thing about it is if you're streaming it, I don't know if, they have the same game on Xbox or Xbox Live or whatever, but when you stream it on Twitch or Ustream, the viewers can type in things like kill all zombies. Yeah, that's what the name of it is. Hashtag kill all zombies. And if you type in kill all zombie, all the zombies on your screen will die instantly. Or somebody could type in spawn big boss and a giant boss zombie will drop in the middle of your map for no reason. And then things like you could type things like dig a pit and it basically isolates you with a pit-like circle around you so the zombies can't touch you. You can just shoot in free 360-degree direction and just mow anybody down that you want. It's a really neat take on viewer interaction, and I think they need to include more stuff like that for when you're streaming different games. Not so much to the point where it actually affects the overall gameplay, but a little things like, let's say if you're streaming The Order, it'd be nice if some kind view out there spawn health items, or you know what I mean, like something like that, or spawn random ammo drops or more enemies.
Right.
You know, things like that would be neat to see in the future. I don't know if the overall audience is ready for stuff like that, but in this particular game, I feel like it works out really well.
Yeah, that sounds like pretty interesting. Now, can you play it without streaming it?
Yes. Yeah, you can. You can. You don't have to stream it at all if you don't want to. It's just, you know, it's a solo experience, wave after wave. I haven't gotten very far in it. I dabbled in it for about 20 minutes or so, but I mean, it's definitely something you can pick up and play if you're feeling bored or you just need something to kill the time for a few minutes or whatever. So it's pretty good.
Sweet. You just got that off the PSN then?
Yeah, speaking of the PSN, I don't know if this is going to reach anybody by the time we're done, but all of the rest of tonight and up until 9 a.m., I believe, I want to say it's Eastern Standard Time that they said, but up until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, there is a 10% discount code on the PlayStation Network that you can receive 10% off of your total purchase of whatever you purchase, whether it be stuff in the flash sale that they're offering right now, which they're offering a lot of great content in the flash sale. But even if it's already discounted, like even if you already have a PSN or a PS Plus discount, you could get an additional 10% off of whatever you're buying. So that's, it's a nice, little bonus to grab a hold of as long as you can. And, I would highly recommend taking advantage of it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. I know I haven't signed on a PlayStation Network in a little while, so I want to grab that Game of Thrones season pass. Now then we get the Borderlands, or Tales from the Borderlands season pass as well. So that, yeah, that should help with that cost.
Sorry. Yeah, definitely.
Didn't mean to bump the mic there. And then you said something about the raid you're doing on Destiny. Is that a DLC raid, or was that one of the...
Yeah, it's the new expansion raid. Every raid so far has had two different modes, is normal and hard. And this time around on the hard raid, there are more enemies, they're harder to kill, and the Crota fight itself at the end is substantially more difficult. Obviously, a lot of players spent a lot of time on it already. They found little loopholes here and there in the programming. But overall, all it requires is just a good team, some dedication to getting your timing down, and making sure you have the strength and weapons to just get the job done. Any Joe Blow off the street can't just come in and raid and expect success. You have to have a solid team. They have to know their individual jobs. And it's other than that, it's pretty just, straight up and down, you know, making sure you don't die. That sounds a little bit more difficult than it really is, but it's good when you have a good team that knows what they're doing. But yeah, Tony, so, what are you playing? What's in your, box?
So right now on Xbox One, I'm playing Halo, the Master Chief Collection. I'm starting over on the campaigns. Started playing Halo 1, doing the campaign, and I started out playing on Heroic, taking my time, trying to get through there. You know, I was like, I don't really want to have to go back through and beat it on the harder difficulties, and mm-hmm. It was just being a pain in the ass. And I didn't, you know, I was getting irritated with how long it was taking, because some of the enemies just seemed like they got too much health or whatever, so I was like, screw this, I'm gonna change it to normal, and everything was going fine until it's like the grunts started like being aggressive, which grunts are just like mindless enemies. They're not, They don't have any tactical, you know, they're not real tactical, they're not aggressive, and they were being aggressive, which was really off to me on a normal setting, you know, you would think.
Right.
That would be more for a legendary or heroic setting.
Right.
So that kind of pissed me off, and I got shot out of the air with a flood that had a rocket launcher. It's like a random shot. I was like, no, this isn't happening. So at that point, I had shut that game off, and I was like, all right, let's go play some Mass Effect 3, because I beat Mass Effect 2 last week, right, and decided I'm going to start that one. And then I seen that they have a sort of like a companion app on the iPod Touch, or on all iOS devices, but it's called Mass Effect Infiltrator. Mm-hmm. So I started playing that one, because you can somehow those link together, and you can get your galaxy readiness up to help you be ready to defeat the Reapers, which are the bad guys in Mass Effect. So
yeah, Reaper doesn't sound like a friendly term,
right? So yeah, those they invade, of course, which you kind of know it's imminent by playing the other two Mass Effects.
What is it with aliens and invading? Can't they just like send an email or some shit like, hey, we're gonna start a war with you guys, you know, give us some prep time or something?
Yeah, just say I'm not sure how this one's gonna end, you know, that, you know, with all the hubbub about the ending on this one before, you know, we had talked about it last podcast about how all the players of the game, they had brought the big stink up, and EA ended up, or not EA, BioWare ended up releasing a new ending to it just to appease all the players, right, of the game.
Which I know by now there's a lot of people that have played it and beaten it, but I myself have never even touched Mass Effect. How did the original ending vary from the add-on ending?
See, that's, I'm not sure I'll be able to add on once I actually finish Mass Effect 3 here. I've never played the trilogy until just recently, so I just beat Mass Effect 2 last week, so I'm just getting into 3. I may be an hour tops into 3, so
I feel like the best possible ending could be if male Shepard and female Shepard got together, did the nasty, had a paradox baby that just rewound the universe back to a simple time where there were no aliens,
and then they destroy all the Mass Effect relays.
Yes.
That works.
Whatever that is. But yeah. Anyway, so you said you had told me before there was some DLC incorporated with Mass Effect 2 that was prelude to Part 3?
Yeah, I before I moved on to Mass Effect 3, I went and played the Rival DLC and the Shadow Broker DLC for Mass Effect 2. Because apparently at the beginning of Mass Effect 3... you're not a commander anymore. You're stripped from that rank because of your decision on the arrival. And what that one was is there's a colony of Batarian I believe they're Batarian. I always forget the races. There's so many different alien races in Mass Effect. If you played the game, you know what
sounds
I'm talking about.
So racist.
Yeah. There's anyways, they're on the edge of the galaxy, and you find out that they have a Reaper artifact, and you find out that the Reapers are coming, and there's a countdown, and it's literally like hours before they get there, and they're going to use that Mass Effect relay there to get to the other parts of the universe and start their invasion. So you can set like an asteroid or something in motion to destroy that relay and keep that from... You pretty much can delay them, you know, like 10 years. I forgot how many years you can delay it, but just kind of get everyone ready for this invasion that's going to happen. So you do that, and everyone thinks you made the wrong choice because you end up killing 300,000 Batarians.
Ah.
So now, you know, you kind of started a war with the Batarians, and the Reapers come in the beginning of Mass Effect 3, and they reinstate you as commander shortly after the game starts.
Because like, somebody's got to clean up the mess.
Right. They're like, well, I guess Shepard was right. We should listen to him the whole time.
Exactly. Or her, depending.
Right, right. And then the Shadow Broker DLC, I'm not sure how that one ties into Mass Effect 3 yet. In Mass Effect 2, in the normal campaign you're playing through, you meet Liara Tassoni, who was one of your squad members in the first Mass Effect, and she's telling you that she's trying to track down the Shadow Broker. And in this one, you actually find out who the Shadow Broker is, you find out who is working for the Shadow Broker, you find him, kill him, and then Liara Tassoni takes over as the Shadow Broker, and she's kind of your, what do you call it, your informant. She tells you, like, what's going on. I'm assuming that's how it's going to work in Mass Effect 3, because she has information on everyone in the galaxy, like, what's, you know, the bad news, the good news, all that stuff. So I think that's going to play a big role in this Mass Effect 3. So a friend of mine had told me I should play both of those before I move on to 3, so that's why I did.
And are you enjoying the experience so far?
Oh, dude, I love Mass Effect. It's it's high on my list for favorite games. It's going to be in my top 3.
Let me ask you this. What do you like better, Mass Effect or Fallout 3?
Oh, man. I'm going to probably have to go with Mass Effect. The Fallout 3 is really good, but Mass Effect is... You just have to play Mass Effect. Even Mass Effect 1, which has the shittiest, like, cover mechanic, horrible fucking aim. Like, the gameplay, like, controls suck ass, but the story is so good. Like, the story in Mass Effect, good. But the controls suck ass. I'm sorry if you love Mass Effect 1 and I'm shitting on your favorite game ever. I love Mass Effect 1. I do. I just hate the gameplays, the controls. If you like the controls of the... What the fuck was that little... they had the little vehicle in that one, and it sucked so bad they didn't bring it back in the second one. I can't think of what it's called. But the Normandy was your ship that you actually flew around the galaxy in, and then there was a ship that you would land on the planets in, and you drive that thing around. I cannot think of the name of that. It was just like a six-wheel vehicle thing. It had turrets on it you would shoot, and the controls sucked so bad on that thing. But yeah, it was so horrible that they didn't even bring it back in the second one. Mass Effect's a good series. You should play it. If they ever do a remaster... Oh, and speaking of remasters, no, last podcast I mentioned Saints Row Re-Elect, and that one does include the DLC with it for the Xbox One and PS4. It comes with that Gat Out of Hell DLC and all that stuff. I seen it at Target today, and it's $49.99, and Target... Yeah. For right now, Target gives you a $10 Target gift card if you buy it. So, nice. I'm like, that's a pretty good deal. You can get that and $10 gift card for your next purchase. Might as well do that. Grab that and then grab Dying Light on Tuesday.
Let's go into our news. On the Dying Light front, everybody here in good old Merca, we're going to be getting our physical and digital copies the day it was promised on the 27th, Tuesday. PC around the world will be getting it the same day. However, over in Europe, the Middle East, Asia, and Australia, they will have a digital release on the PS4 and Xbox One on the 28th, but the physical copies that you may have pre-ordered will not be arriving until February 27th. Techland, you know, realizes it's a pain in the ass, so as a way to make up for it, they are going to release all the physical pre-ordered versions with two DLC packs, the first one being Cuisine and Cargo, sounds delicious, and the other one is the Ultimate Survivor Bundle, which I'm assuming is going to be things like, extra weapons or varied weapons and whatnot. But it'll be nice for those who are patient enough to wait on that, because you get these two DLCs for free just for waiting. So I don't think it's too bad of a deal. I'm not a very patient guy, so I would be a little frustrated at it. But I mean, hey, you're getting two DLC packs for nothing,
right?
And, you know, for just waiting an extra month.
I wonder how many people will actually grab it on the digital end and grab their two free DLCs and try and sell their physical copy on eBay or return their physical copy, or if they're going to package their DLC packs inside the retail case, you know what I mean?
I'm going to go ahead and assume that these companies aren't stupid and that they will have thought of that as well. So I'm going to go ahead and guess that they're going to release their redemption code for the DLC within the packaging, just in order to prevent, you know, loss of sales or loss of, you know, any kind of income that they could have potentially gained from that. Because, you know, it's like a lot of people don't take the time to think that these companies are companies with people that work for them that have families that they're providing for. And all this DLC content from any game takes actual work to do, and it costs money to make. And, you know, these people deserve to be paid for it. So the fact that they're going to go ahead and give you two of their free, I don't know, I don't have any idea how much DLC they're planning on releasing. But two, let's say potentially there's four DLC packages. Half of that for free is pretty freaking good, especially if the game does well, which I'm assuming it's going to, because it just looks amazing with all the work they put into it. But that kind of stuff, shouldn't be taken lightly and shouldn't try to be, I guess I want to say fandangled a little bit, because it's free. You know what I mean? Don't try to skim off the top when you're already getting some off the top, you know?
Yeah, I think they did a solid to everyone by giving them two free DLCs when, you know, they're still releasing it digitally. So if you really, really want it, you can download it. And if you want the physical merchandise, you know, you just got to wait that extra month or whatever to get it. I don't know, you know, me personally, I don't mind if I got to get the game digitally. I don't mind downloading it that way. I know some places have restrictions on how much bandwidth you can use, or how much download, how much data you can use. So I can understand that if you don't want to reach your limit by downloading a massive game. I'm not sure how much data that would take. You know, most games are usually around 50 gigs or so.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I'm kind of old school. I like the physical copies of everything. I like that, you know, being able to have a wall or shelf full of discs and know that I could, you know, go through my physical library at any given time and just pick up something that I want to play and, you know, put it in and not have the worry of corrupted data or, you know, what have you, if there's something wrong internally within the information or the system. You know, if you have a bad disk or something, you just go somewhere and get it replaced or fixed if you can. But it gets a little bit shaky for me when it comes to crappy information or crappy downloading. But then especially when you get the issues of, I know now they have that whole preload thing where you can have it downloaded to your system, you know, days in advance or whatever. But then it's just sitting there staring at you and you're like, I want to play this. And you can't. You can't touch it until the day it's supposed to come out. So for me, you might as well, you know, go out and get it. And I kind of appreciate places like GameStop that, for the more popular games, they have their midnight releases. So I have it hours before I technically should. Even though it is released at midnight, you know, people like me, I don't consider my day to start until I wake up the next day. So even if it is midnight, it's still the same day for me.
Right.
But yeah, I am definitely more of a hands-on kind of person when it comes to the stuff that I own. So
I know one good thing about having the physical copy, and most developers would see it as a bad thing for them, is if you don't like the game, you're not completely out $60. You know, you can trade it in, you can sell it on eBay, whatever, try and make some of your money up. But that's, you know, the developers see that as a bad thing because, you know, when they retail or whoever buys that copy, that's money that the developer's not going to get. You know, that's money that whoever buys that copy from you that is money that eventually the developer sees that as money that they would have got because they would have had to buy a new copy or right. a digital copy. So,
right. But if you look at it from another angle, it's also good advertising. You know, let's say you get a kid that buys a PS exclusive or an Xbox exclusive and they go to GameStop and they see it on sale for like 10, 15 bucks. And it's a series that they've never tried before. Let's say it's Uncharted or let's say it's Gears of War. And they try this game for 10 or 15 bucks. They're like, crap, I love this game so much that when the next one comes out, I'm going to pre-order it. I'm going to pay the full 60. Well, that's a whole new customer that they just gained because they got it, the original, for a discounted price. And whereas they might have never, ever bought that series or that game before when it was full price.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like a double-edged sword. You know, it has its highs and its lows. And I could see a lot of developers not liking that as well. But then again, I think that the good probably outweighs the bad when you have companies like Sony actively saying, hey, you can flip-flop games. You can give them to GameStop. You can trade them between friends. Trading them between friends is making even less money for them than it would be if you were to give it to GameStop. You know, so then when they did that E3 press conference and they said, yeah, it's here's how we game share. And they just passed a copy of whatever game it was they were holding to their buddy.
Right.
You know, that's actively saying that they are not mad at companies like GameStop for doing the buy here, sell here, trade here type deal. So so I think it's a smart move marketing wise. And I don't see places like that going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it can be the next generation that can do away with it, or the next generation could stay the same. But if I like a game, I'm going to support it, you know, whatever way I can by getting the right. DLC, stuff like that.
Exactly.
But if I get a game and I absolutely hate it, you can bet I'm going to trade it in or try and get rid of it somehow. That's, you know, where if I buy it digitally, I'm kind of screwed. You know, I just lost whatever I paid, you know.
For me, I know, unlike you, I'm not a millionaire. I can't afford every brand new copy of every game that comes out whenever I want it. So for me, places like GameStop can be a saving grace, because even though they only give you a fraction of what you originally paid for the game, which at most times seems pretty bogus, if I had a couple of games laying around, like recently, how I said I platinum Far Cry 4, and I absolutely loathed Advanced Warfare. I have two games right there that I planned on doing nothing else with. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Far Cry. This is my first Far Cry ever. It was really, really great. I had a lot of fun with it, so much so that I platinumed it. But now that I platinumed it, there's nothing else for me to do with it, even though there's about to be DLC dropping and everything for it. I feel like I've gotten all the experience out of it that I need, because I completed the entire core game. Plus, there's other games on the horizon, like Dying Light here on Tuesday. And I figured, you know what? Why don't I take in those two, since I'm not really going to do anything with either of them, and give me a little discount off of Dying Light, which is exactly what I did.
Right. So, yeah, I see nothing wrong with that, especially, you know, if you're tight on money or whatever the case may be. If there's a game that you're dying to play and you really, you know, you got stuff laying around that you're not playing. I totally agree with you too on games that you platinum. Like, once you get a platinum, to me, there's nothing left to do unless you're going to do the DLCs.
And, right, or unless it contains like a multiplayer.
Right.
You know, like previous Call of Duties in the past, I platinum, but I kept them because of the multiplayer, which is what pretty much 90% of the gaming population does with Call of Duty anyway.
Right.
So, but yeah, that's, I don't see that as a problem. Most of the time it's helped out, and it keeps me from over cluttering my shelf space for games.
Digital. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. So, speaking of digital, another news story that came out last week or earlier this week, Game of Thrones episode 2, The Lost Lords, they're heading to the wall in this episode. Just in case you didn't play the first episode, they teased in this trailer some of the bigger names. You've seen Jon Snow, who you know is at the wall if you've been up with current episodes of the actual television show. So, and then also showed Tyrion Lannister again, who you know is played by Peter Dinklage. And they also showed up. Go ahead.
Oh, no, my fault. I was thinking out loud, but I was going to say he's also the Dinklage bot in Destiny.
Yeah, yep. And, but yeah, in the game, if you don't know, you play as the House of the Forester. You actually play multiple characters. You're not just one character. You play between several people of the House of the Forester. And they were loyal to the Starks at the beginning of the, of this series. And the series starts and it takes place right at the beginning of the Red Wedding, which if you watch the show, I've read the book, you know what I'm referring to when I say the Red Wedding. So I won't go into any spoiler territory for the show or the movie, but yeah, this is where it all takes place. Episode 2, The Lost Lord, you're heading to the wall. If you're going to play it on PS3, PS4, or PC, you can look for the episode 2 to come out on February 3rd. If you're playing it on Xbox One or 360, you can look for it on February 4th. And if you're going to play it on iOS or Android, it's coming out on February 5th.
I always hated going to the wall. Everybody else got to enjoy recess and play dodgeball while I stood there on that goddamn wall.
Right. You know, you assume the wall is never a good thing. If you're going to the wall, you've done something bad, so.
Unless it's Pink Floyd, The Wall. That was great.
Or you're just another brick. I don't know.
Another brick in the wall?
Yeah, something.
I see what you did there.
I see what you did, but I didn't eat all my meat, so.
Oh, okay. But you can't have your meat. You can't have your pudding if you don't have your meat.
Right, right.
Right, right. So speaking of other games, I believe you had told me before something about another Elder Scrolls game with a little added bonus for this time around.
Yeah, it almost seems like it is another Elder Scrolls game, but what they did is they kind of retitled it, or they renamed it. It's going to be titled The Elder Scrolls Online Tamriel Unlimited, and they're going to drop the subscription fee. And what it is, it's coming out on June 9th for Xbox One and PS4. And they're going to give you all the updates and all content additions that are on the PC for the console versions. And if you already had the pre-orders for the Elder Scrolls Online, it'll just transfer over to the Elder Scrolls Tamriel Unlimited.
And so they're finally going to be doing something they should have been doing from the get-go and letting you play for free since you're already paying subscription to play online games anyway?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure they're, you know, with most free-to-play MMOs, they're going to have microtransactions. So I'm sure they're going to have something along those sorts. And they did mention having on the PC end some sort of subscription base. And I forgot what it was titled. It was something like Subscription Plus or something like that. You can pay in 30, 60, or 90-day increments, and you get like bonus in-game currency and other stuff, which I did play it on PC for a little while, but I haven't really looked up in too much of it. So, but I do know since I already have it on PC, that will actually, on June 9th, it will upgrade to the Tamriel Unlimited, and it'll be the free-to-play version, which all you have to do is either already own the Elder Scrolls Online or just buy the game when it comes out, and then you'll have the free-to-play version, which they said includes hundreds of hours of gameplay. So looks like you just pay one price and you'll have hundreds of hours to play. So
that sounds amazing. On the opposite, more legal side of gaming bonuses, there was a settlement suit apparently filed by Sony, or not by Sony, but to Sony, for the 2011 attacks or intrusion or hack or whatever you want to say, and anyone that had an existing PlayStation Network account, or a CryoCity or Sony Online Entertainment account, is going to get some bonuses if you qualify to be a part of this suit. Some of the things that you could receive would be payment equal to paid wallet balances if $2 or more in PlayStation Network or Sony Online Entertainment accounts that have been inactive since the intrusion. Basically, if you had an account and when the system got hacked in 2011, you had to either cancel that account or stop using that account, and you had any amount of monies that was left in your online wallet, you would get those returned to you for no additional fees or charges or whatever. One of the other things that they're offering is one or more of a PS3 game, a PSP game, three free PS3 themes, you say that six times fast, or a free 3-month subscription to PlayStation Plus. They're also offering a free month of Music Unlimited for Crowd City account holders who didn't have a PSN account, and $4.50 in Sony Online Entertainment Station cash. And that's pretty much, other than the identity theft reimbursement that they, the clause that they offered up as a part of that. But if you want to be a part of this, settlement and get some of the benefits, you have to file a claim by August 31st of this year or 60 days after the settlement becomes final. And if you want to do that, the website to go to is www.psnsoesettlement.com, or you can call them directly at 1-877-552-1284. I'm not going to partake in this suit because I feel like Sony's already given a crap ton of stuff, including their PlayStation Plus subscription, where it's so beneficial to have that as it is. And I don't feel like Sony owes any of its consumers or fans anything else other than what they've already given them. I mean, they've actually went ahead for the Christmas debacle, given everybody a 5-day free extension on their PlayStation Plus subscription. So, I mean, even though some people might look at that, oh, 5 days, that's it. But, I mean, they didn't have to give you anything. You know what I mean? That wasn't their fault. It was those dicks at the Lizard Squad. It had nothing to do with Sony. It was not a...
yeah, you're referring to the Christmas thing there, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You know, it wasn't a fault in their system per se.
Yeah, but, I agree with you on part of that, and it's part of it I don't agree with you. I agree that they don't owe anybody... I mean, I don't agree with the part where you said they don't owe anybody anything. I think if you got hacked and something happened to your account where they stole your identity or stole some money from you, I agree that they do owe you, you know, whatever got taken from you. If they took money from your account, stuff like that, yeah, I think they should reimburse you that way. But I think Sony is, you know, they've covered their tracks. You know, before they already offered several free games initially once they came back online. They apologized to all the people. Even if you didn't have your identity stolen, you know, everyone that was on Sony's account before had gotten free games. You know what I mean? Even if your identity wasn't hacked or stolen, none of your credit card information was used or anything like that, you still got free games from before. So
that's kind of what I meant. I should have probably rephrased that a little bit better. What I meant was like they've already paid their dues.
Right.
You know, I don't feel like they owe you any more. Trying to pay you more things like free games or free themes or whatever. Now, like you said, the reimbursement of any kind of monies lost or the identity theft stuff, yes, they should definitely help you out with that. But from what I've understood, they've gone out of their way to try to help some people already with that back when it initially happened and back when they realized that some of our people were getting hacked and their identities were being stolen. Now, I don't think that the other added stuff on top of that is necessary, but I mean, identity theft is a huge, huge thing. It's nothing to be taken lightly. Yes, they should be helping out a lot more with that kind of stuff because that kind of shit can ruin people's lives.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I should have rephrased that a little bit better.
You're all
right. But as far as the settlement is concerned, I don't feel like all of it is necessary. But yeah, they should definitely keep track of those folks who have been hacked and whatnot and had identity problems, and they should be on that. But I mean, the fact that they are trying to be on that is more than enough for me to stay a Sony loyal. Sorry for all you Xbox peoples out there. Not that I hate you, but I enjoy my PlayStation, and that's probably where I'm gonna stay.
Yeah, see, I like PlayStation as well, and you know, being a person that plays on both platforms, and I work in a big factory, so I get lots of friends that are gamers that ask me, you know, which system do you prefer, you know, this going to last gen, and I would tell them, I said, well, what do you play? And, you know, I'm like, if you want to play a game that has a good story, good graphics, all that, you want to play on Sony. And then it's, you know, they always bring up, well, Didn't they get hacked? You know, it's like I'm a Patriots fan. Everyone always brings up Spygate. It's like, seriously, you know,
right?
You guys remember the bad things, but what they don't realize is, you know, what they did, you know, it, you know, technically it wasn't like somebody was like, hey, here's all our information. You guys come take it. It's like someone illegally hacked them, took the information, you know.
Intruded.
Yeah. So it's just, and plus Sony, you know, they did, I think they, like you said, they paid their dues. You know, they've apologized. I think they've went and did everything they can. So, like I said, you know, I've always told everybody when they ask me, you know, it really depends on what you play. If you want good story, good first party exclusives, I think Sony has that. I say, if you go for the online play, if you're only going to play like Call of Duty and Madden, you most likely want to get Xbox, because Activision and Microsoft are in bed together with Call of Duty. You're going to get your DLCs first. All that's going to come to Xbox 30 days first, or 30 days before it comes to PlayStation, you know. And usually I don't have any issues with Microsoft servers as I did with PlayStation servers, which I haven't played Call of Duty on PlayStation since Ghost, so I don't know if they have any issues since then, but I haven't had any problems on either of the newer systems playing online. I don't know if you have or haven't.
Yeah, my only issue was this new Call of Duty sucks, in my opinion.
Right.
So I haven't been playing it. But when the PvP stuff, as far as that's concerned with Destiny, I've been having a great time with it. I haven't had any real lagging issues like I used to on Ghost, and that might have just been an Activision thing. You know, that might have been a thing that they had poor servers to begin with. And I'll never know, because I, you know, haven't really looked into that as much as I probably should have, for as much as I complained about it. But I feel like, depending on who you are, even though Activision is partnered, quote unquote, with Bungie for Destiny, I think that it was mostly Bungie's ability for the matchmaking and what have you on Destiny that made the PvP experience a lot better than what the last like two or three Call of Duties has been. I feel like their reward system is way out of whack. But other than that, I've had no problem finding people to play with. It's taken me minutes to get into matches, whereas I could wait for 20 minutes on a Call of Duty server waiting for one match of free-for-all, you know? And stuff like that kind of turns me away from games that I like to play. But I feel like on the PS4, everything is a lot smoother than it has been on the PS3. And it could just be the power of the hardware. It could be the different game servers. I don't know. All I know is I haven't had a whole lot of issues with it, and I've just been enjoying all the PvP stuff that I can when I can. So,
well, that shit's all in the past. So let's talk about a little bit of stuff that's going to come out here in the near future. So games that are going to come out next week, starting on Tuesday the 27th, coming to your Xbox One, the PC, and the PlayStation 4. The game that we're looking forward to, Dying Light, developed by Techland and published by Warner Brothers Studios. Dave, tell us all about it.
Man, I could spend forever telling you all about it. What I will tell you is, from just what I've seen and heard and read, 4-player co-op throughout the entire campaign. That in itself is a good sell. If you like zombies, if you like killing zombies, if you like watching zombies kill other people, like anything zombie related, this is definitely going to be your game. They have a new mode that they added for free for everyone. Initially, it wasn't going to be free for everyone. Initially, it was only going to be pre-order DLC, but now it's free for everyone across the board.
And this sounds the most interesting to me.
Yeah, I can't wait to check this out either, but it's a mode where you actually can be the zombie, and you're a souped up version of the zombies that are walking around during the day. You have these tendrils that you can whip out of your wrists and your forearms to maneuver you from building to building or whatever.
Spider zombie.
Yeah, basically spider zombie. And you stalk other human players. It's basically PvP with zombies and humans. And the interesting element that is an unknown element yet, until Tuesday, is whether or not you will be alerted when someone's trying to invade your game as a zombie, or whether you won't be alerted. if anyone's ever played Watch Dogs like I have, you barely get any kind of warning when a player invades your game. You do get a small message to say you're being hacked or what have you, but you don't even know that a person's in your lobby until they are in a very advantageous. I'm not an English major, but they have an advantage of being in a position where they can stalk you until they are trying to do what they are trying to do, and then you have to try to take them out before they complete their objective. I don't know if that's going to be the case for Dying Light. I don't know if the matchmaking is going to be a thing of, hey, there's a zombie stalking you or blah, 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 blah. If not, I feel like that would add to the intensity. If you are trying to survive at night and you're just a few feet away from your safe house and all of a sudden you see this like Spider-Man zombie whipping across the rooftops, you're going to be like, oh crap, I think I'm in trouble because now there's another human player trying to come after me. And I feel like that would be really, really exciting as a gamer to have that moment where you know you're not in control.
How long do you think it'll be till every zombie in the game is a human controlled player?
Man,
how hard would that be?
I don't think that would ever be a thing. I kind of hope not.
Right.
But, I mean, there's advantages to both.
Because zombies are supposed to be brainless, you know.
Right.
You know, they're not supposed to, they're just supposed to act on instinct per se, or, you know, just be attracted to sound or whatever the case may be. And to have a human controlling them, it kind of changes what a zombie is.
Exactly. And I think the one player controlled zombie is enough intensity. But the thing about that mode is that both sides, both the human characters and the zombie character, have potential advantages, where the human advantage is that you could be playing with your group. You could be playing with all four of your crew, and if someone tries to invade your game, it's 4-on-1. But if you look at it from the zombie point of view, the whole world is trying to kill the human characters. I mean, the world as far as the world of the game that you're in. So you technically have an unlimited supply of backup as the zombie, because all these other zombies, especially at night when they transform and they're more lethal and they stalk you and they hunt you and you have to use stealth tactics to get away from them. At night, you're 10 times more likely to stalk a human and kill a human player. Because the whole rest of that environment is also looking for these humans. So it's going to be really intense. It's going to be really interesting to see, a lot of troll videos of people, you know, stalking other people as the zombie. And then they, you know, use the environment around them to get the job done. Because from what I hear and read, you can actually level up your zombie in the same way that you level up your human character specifically for that mode. You can unlock different abilities, different, I don't know if you want to call them weapons for your zombie. They're like, I guess they're like bioorganic weapons that you can like, as tendrils, grow spikes or some shit like that. I'm not 100% sure. We'll find out Tuesday, but, it's gonna be really interesting. And, I can't wait to start making my own videos myself. I believe you're getting it on the PS4 as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely need to team up, do some, streaming. I'll put our, Twitch handles in our description here on the audio version. That way, people can hopefully, follow us on, Twitch. That way you can see our streams and whatnot. And then I'll give a shout out to our YouTube channel. That way, we can get some good videos out there. But to, if you guys are interested to, you want to team up with us or whatever, it's a squad based game. So we might have some room on our PlayStation friends list. You can hit us up. I'm a Big Ton 5. That's BIGTON. And the number 5, no spaces or anything crazy.
And I'm Goku Orta 5, GOKUORTA 5. Same thing with me, no spaces, no underscore, none of that stuff.
Another game coming out then on Tuesday, Grim Fandango Remastered. It's coming out to the PS4, the Vita, and PC. It is developed and published by Double Fine. It's based on the classic by Tim Schafer from 1998. It's a game I've never played. I've heard a lot of good things about it from the other, you know, IGN podcasts and other podcasts I listen to. So I don't know if I'm going to check it out. I probably will. I do like adventure games, but I don't know too much about this game other than it's an older game and they're remaking it. Another thing hidden on Tuesday, not necessarily a game, but a DLC pack for Call of Duty, the Call of Duty Havoc. Yep. Yeah. And they got some big name actors and actresses in there. I know John Malkovich, Bill Paxton,
Rose McGowan.
Yep. And then the guy that plays Shane. I always forget his name, John something. I think you just said it, but I overtalked you.
Yeah, no, I was butting in. Yeah, John Bernthal. Ethanol, I don't know, but he was Shane from The Walking Dead.
Yep.
And then he was also in, just recently, he was in Fury with Brad Pitt and the rest of the crew. That was all right. But I like him as an actor. I think he does good. He has that quality where he can go from, and I hate saying new age sayings like this, but from 0 to 100, no time flat. He did a good job. And this DLC seems like it's focused more around John Malkovich's character. If you're a fan of the Call of Duty zombies, the real Call of Duty zombies from back in the day, from like World at War, Black Ops, and Black Ops 2, there has always been kind of a centralized theme within the gameplay and the Easter eggs, where the story kind of centered around Dr. Richtofen, who was voiced by Nolan North. Who also, if you don't know who Nolan North is, he voiced Drake in the Uncharted series. The whole story kind of centered around, you know, Richtofen and his quest for power and blah, 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 blah. I don't know what this next entry in the series is going to be, because it's got the, in my opinion, the lame-ass exo-zombies, which I feel like zombies don't need to be exo-suited or even have other abilities outside of what they normally, I mean, I'm saying this like, you know, zombies are really, you know, here and we have a whole anatomy sheet of, no. But the fictional zombies, the godfather himself of zombies, George Romero, has sat there and said that he despises the idea of fast moving zombies. He feels like it takes away the scare factor of them, and it just makes them a lot, just seems more psychotic than they are, you know, dead. He did do the remake for Dawn of the Dead, which was originally his movie as well. But that was like the one and only time where he actively like supported fast moving or running zombies. I'm sure I can't speak for him, obviously, but I want to believe that he would agree with me on the idea that exo zombies is just ridiculous. Yes, you could also say that that's scary and, you know, it's a little thrilling to have them chase you or whatever, but zombies shouldn't double jump. Zombies jump really, period, at all. They should not have hydraulic suits attached to them. I just think the whole idea is ludicrous. I mean, it could be fun, but that's what Dying Light's coming out for. You know, I mean, the idea that they transform at night into a tougher breed of zombie. Now, they're still zombies. They'll chase after you, yes. They're faster, yes. But they're not like, there's no compression sounds when they jump, and there's no, you know, externalized help to them as a zombie. It's just something that transforms within them from the day to night cycle. It's not an added help that they get. They're still zombies. But I mean, hey, to each their own. I'll never knock a zombie lover. Regardless of what kind of zombie it is, I have my personal opinion. Everyone have their personal opinion. But the Exo Zombies, as far as the storyline and the cinematics go, it does look good. It looks interesting. I'm interested to see if they keep those particular actors together for any future installments of the zombie stuff. Cause I know the previous, celebrity maps on Black Ops and Black Ops 2 did very well. Did you ever play the old maps where you played as like Danny Trejo, Sir Michelle Gellar, Robert Englund, and Michael Rooker?
I bought all the season passes, but I don't recall those characters in particular. That doesn't, you know, it's been so long since I played Call of Duty on the older system. So last one I played, I remember, was the one on Black Ops 2 where you're down in the the caverns. I think it's kind of like a Western kind of theme or whatever. And there's like a witch, I think. And
Buried.
Yeah, Buried. Yeah, that's the last one I remember. And yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, now that one actually wrapped up the storyline for basically all the previous Zombies maps and the newer characters that were created for Black Ops 2. My personal favorite is probably the Origins, the one where they basically go back to the very beginning when Dempsey and Richtofen, Tank and or Dempsey is Tank, but Takeo and Nikolai all meet for the first time. And spoiler alert, once you complete the deal or the Easter eggs, you actually complete the level. And I believe it's the first time that they've ever had a zombie map where once you do the Easter egg completely and see it all the way through, you actually end the game. And through a cinematic story, it reveals that the entirety of all the zombies maps were actually a game, a story game that was being played between a boy and a girl, the actual kids. And the boy's name was Richtofen, and the girl's name was Samantha. And so it was kind of a cool little twist that they added there at the end that kind of pulled everything together and left it open. So it's going to be interesting to see if they continue off of that storyline for this iteration of Zombies, or if it's going to be a completely new storyline for the next gen Zombies, or because it's Sledgehammer that did this one, correct?
Yeah, it was Sledgehammer on that DLC there. It was the Sledgehammer development team that did the Havoc DLC.
So pretty much all the content for this Advanced Warfare.
Yeah, so far at least. I don't know if the next iterations are going to be Sledgehammer 2 or not, or if they have that contracted through someone else.
I thought, from what I understood, that now it's three companies that are doing Call of Duty from now on, and they're going to rotate every other year. Yeah. So, like, I think that this next year will be Activision again solely. And then after that would be Infinity Ward, and then back to Sledgehammer.
I think Activision is just the company that owns them. I think it's going to be the Treyarch Infinity.
Treyarch. Treyarch and then Infinity Ward and then back to Sledgehammer.
Yeah. Yep.
Because I was expecting this next Call of Duty to be, Treyarch with their continuation of the zombies, the traditional zombies and what have you. But no, the Sledgehammer thing, because I wasn't paying attention. Seemed like it came out of nowhere to me until like the last 4 months or so before this release. And once I picked it up, I was not met with what I expected. So, but if you get on the Havoc DLC at all, and you check out the zombies, please let me know how it goes. If you get into the storyline of it at all. Let me know if they make any mention of Richtofen or any of the former crew, and I might reconsider getting back on there specifically for that, because like I said, I appreciate a good story. So
yeah, absolutely, I'll let you know. I'm sure I'll have questions because I don't remember any of the behind story of the zombie mode.
Gotcha.
But yeah, and then the only other game coming out next week actually comes out on a Friday. I think it's the 30th. And it's Life is Strange, coming out to PS3, PS4, Xbox One, Xbox 360, and the PC. It's developed by Don't Nod. I think it's a collaboration, actually, between Don't Nod and Square Enix. And that's a episodic adventure game as well. And it's set in a fictional town called Arcadia Bay in Oregon. You're a senior student, Max Clawfield, who comes back to town after 5 years to reunite with her former friends, Chloe, as they attempt to find out what happened to a fellow student, Rachel Amber, whose disappearance remains unexplained. And I know they have like this cool feature where you can rewind time, and it kind of takes place, or it kind of helps with puzzle solving. They mentioned like if something falls over or something happens, you kind of rewind and it goes back up. But if you were to put, say, something in your pocket and then rewind time, that thing remains in your pocket and then the thing will go back up. And you know, it'd be kind of neat too, you know, if you had did a choice that you didn't like or whatever, if you're talking to someone and you said something you didn't like the way that turned out, you can rewind time and then pick a different way, kind of see it. You know, they said you could use it to your advantage to get the story the way you want it, to make it your story. So I thought that was kind of neat.
Puzzle solving through the use of time manipulation sounds pretty interesting. I think I'll probably give that a shot as well. And you said that they were in collaboration with Square Enix, this Don't Nod?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, see, I'm not familiar with Don't Nod, and I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it. It's D-O-N-T-N-O-D, and it's all one word, so I'm saying sounds, Don't Nod, so.
Sounds about right.
And I don't know of any of their past works. I'm not familiar with them. Now, Square Enix, of course, there was a time when anything Square Enix put out, I'd be like, oh, I'm getting it, you know, no questions asked, but not with that the most.
Of course, that was back when that was Squaresoft.
Right.
You know, and like, I feel like since they joined forces, I feel like they haven't been what their legacy was. I mean, everyone who's ever played Final Fantasy VII knows the power of a Squaresoft game. And then when they did Kingdom Hearts, I believe that was after when they formed Square Enix, right?
I'm not sure on the time there.
Either way, games like that, where you didn't have 100% voice acting and you actually had to read some of the things, especially back in Final Fantasy VII, some of that stuff is still very impactful. You could put in the disc today and you know, start it and still have a completely memorable experience. And it'd be the same kind of impact that it had back when it came out, which was like, what, 97?
Yeah, sounds about right. Like that.
Back when you had to have multiple discs for one game. And that's something that people nowadays, you know, this generation never had to experience, you know?
You know, you still had multiple discs last gen because Microsoft was an idiot and still put a DVD drive in the Xbox 360. So games like Mass Effect 2, Mass Effect 3, those are multiple discs because they, you know, they went with the HD drive. Didn't they go with HD as a separate thing?
HD quality. And then Sony went with the Blu-ray. And then that's when the format war started between the DVDs. And Tony, remind me again real quick who won that war.
Oh, definitely Sony on that one. Wasn't even close. I had no doubt there, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was just so much smarter. There was so much more space on the discs.
I mean, a Blu-ray held double what the HD did. And then a Blu-ray compared to a normal DVD is, you know, Blu-ray holds close to, is it 25 gig or 50 gig? I always forget.
I'm not entirely sure on the specs either. It's just a shitload. Yeah. Let's just say it that way. But yeah.
Just know that you can put the whole Mass Effect trilogy on one Blu-ray.
Yeah, you really could. It's nuts. But yeah, I feel like, I mean, like that, I totally forgot about that because, you know, like I said, not a Microsoft player. But the whole, you know, multi-disc thing, sometimes I honestly kind of miss it. Because you feel like you're actually like legitimately progressing through things. You know what I mean? It's like when you got to that first part, on Final Fantasy VII where it's like, okay, please eject disc one and insert disc two. You're like, oh my God, now it's getting real. You know what
right,
I mean?
Yeah.
Crap, now it's getting further. So there's some times where I do miss that. Do I wish it was back? Not necessarily, but I feel like there's a level of nostalgia that comes with doing things like that. Same as blowing into a Nintendo cartridge. You know, like a lot of, I want to say a good percentage of people that has been born over the last 20 years will probably never have to experience that, or the rapidly pressing of the reset button, or actually putting your hand in the cartridge slot and shaking it up and down as a weird ghetto way of trying to, you know, restart your system just to get your game to play. Cause I don't know about you, but back when the, original Nintendo came out and back when Square Enix was still Squaresoft and they were doing the original Final Fantasies, I became somewhat of a Nintendo technician because of the different ways that I invented of trying to get my system to just play the damn game, you know, whether it be, blowing on the cartridge or waving it in the air or, you know, taking a toothbrush to the inside chips, you know, whatever you had to do just to get that bad boy to go from blue to play.
Yeah, so. I just remember trying about everything. I remember shoving like a cassette, you know, pushing the game all the way in, putting the cassette inside on top of it, and that would work sometimes. It was crazy what would work, or putting an extra game in, you know, just to push the game all the way in. So it was crazy what you get to work on the regular Nintendo, what would make it work. So
everybody was an engineer back then.
So yeah, peroxide on a Q-tip, clean the chip. Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely feels like, Square Enix as a whole has lost their shine, man. They're definitely not the company that they used to be. And, I don't know if it's because they have this whole, you know, Japanese pride thing going on, or, because they just really don't care about being successful. But I feel like if they did even a single thing like a Final Fantasy VII fully devoted, fully dedicated remake, that would be enough to get them jump-started for the next 20 years. Because the amount of fans,
Well, it depends, though. You know, I think it would, but it seems like the way they budget, like with Tomb Raider did really well, but it seems like they budgeted it bad because Tomb Raider sold well, but they said it didn't make them money because of their budget or whatever.
Right.
I just remember hearing that on one of the podcasts that I had listened to before, where they're saying that they didn't make, you know, they didn't hit their numbers. It wasn't a success. But if you look at how many it sold, it was like some crazy number it sold. It would have been a success for any other company, but not for them. Is it just because they're not budgeting it right? Or, you know, what's the issue? There's got to be something, you know. Something right. In that company either needs restructured. They need to look back at what they were doing right before and iterate that in what they're doing now and get rid of the stuff that's not working.
Right. Yeah, it could be several things, but the fact of the matter is that they are kind of phasing themselves out with the way that they're conducting business. You know, it just seems like they're taking way too long to come up with an individual title as it is. And like you said, B, they're budgeting problems. They're just not being smart about how they're going about, you know, selling their products. So
They're either putting too much into advertisement and not into the development or something.
I hope that they turn that around, because I would love to see them come back, and I would love to see them, you know, finish things like, Kingdom Hearts 3, and do things like bring back Final Fantasy for this generation. Because Final Fantasy VII, like I said, there's not enough people in the world who could go on about it. You know what I mean? Like, there, I'm sure, have been people out there who told their kids bedtime stories through that game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I've heard of those instances where people have, like, my dad told me that story as a kid. And then, what do you mean he told you that story? It was a game. Like, oh, well, I thought it was just a bedtime story. No, son, go play that.
You know?
Like, pick it up. Download it on the streaming service.
Something. Yeah.
Is there anything from, like, your childhood as far as games go? Because we all know how Hollywood's been doing with the reboots of movies and stuff. Is there anything that you would like to see a potential series or a individual title that you feel like the companies can bring back and bring back well?
That's a good question. And I had to sit and think on that one for a minute.
Like, me personally, I feel like the Legacy of Kain series.
Oh, yeah.
And the Soul Reaver series. That could be done amazingly. And with the next-gen graphics and the voice actors, the caliber of voice actors that we have right now, hell, you wouldn't even have to change all of them. The guy who did Kain... and forgive me for not remembering who he was. He had a few small acting roles here and there on television. But he was an amazing voice actor, and he's still alive to this day, if I'm not mistaken. If I am, feel free to correct me, because I'm not perfect, people. But he did amazing voices, Kain. And now we have very high caliber actors, for games nowadays, like, Troy Baker. Well, I don't know if you remember way, way back, I want to say it was the original PlayStation. Bruce Willis lent his voice to a very undersold and very little known game. It was like a top-down third-person shooter. And I can't for the life of me remember. I want to say it's like called like Apocalypse or Anarchy or something like that. But Bruce Willis did the entire voiceover for the character, and it didn't sell very well. You know, so like you said, it is nice to see some of these big name people try to stick their neck out for the little guys, and you know, kind of circling back around in a very roundabout way to the whole revitalization of older titles past. We have the technology. We can make everything better, faster, stronger. We have the voice actors to make these roles so memorable that they will be future bedtime stories for other kids and other gamers in the future. And it just, I just feel like there is, with this trend in Hollywood of people bringing back franchises that they have no right touching, looking at you, Michael Bay, I feel like there's no reason that some of these amazing stories can't be retold for this generation of gamers better than what Hollywood is doing for the movies. I mean, now, do I feel like there are some of these reboots that are doing well? Yeah, there are some of them. But I think that the games can do it better. Obviously, my point is, or to prove my point, Tomb Raider. You know, like you said, even though Square didn't make hardly anything off of it, it was great. It was a great reboot. I had never played a Tomb Raider game until that point, and I loved it. I thought it did really well. And I think it had a level of grittiness and realism that the others lacked, and that was really needed for that series. So with that being said, with the Tomb Raider, I feel like there's definitely a lot of potential revitalizations out there that could definitely bank a lot of coin for some of these developers and push their future IPs into a nice, comfortable spot. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, that's going to be it for this week's episode of Double Tap. Thanks for tuning in. Keep in touch with us. Follow me on Twitter at Tony the Gamer Guy. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Deadpool Orta. If you could, also in iTunes, if you could like us, rate us, throw some comments in there. If you have any suggestions for us, either direct message us on Twitter, hit us up. Like we said, please, 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 we need those likes and comments. Being a new podcast, we'd appreciate it any way you can help us out. And thanks again. Tune in next week, where we will hopefully have some updates for you with Dying Light as we are playing through it and give you our review and progress on it, and we'll go from there.